The Guardian. Guardian Daily. News from The Guardian.
Hello, this is Guardian Daily. On Monday, April the 7th, I'm John Dennis. Today, a warning to the world from a top climatologist. Sea levels will rise to disastrous levels even if we meet our most optimistic carbon dioxide targets.
What he's saying is that the ambition that the world has to keep CO2 levels to 450 parts per million is in itself completely inadequate.
Also today, as more and more children are prescribed tranquilizers to control their behaviour, new evidence shows it's putting their lives at risk. And the Olympic torch makes a chaotic route across London as protesters against China's action in Tibet make their voices heard.
The police have quoted Section 14 of the Public Order Act and many demonstrators clearing people off the pavements. Anyone with a Tibetan flag or any kind of banner has been moved out of the way.
Guardian Daily with John Dennis from guardian.co.uk.
But before we hear about that, let's go to Bill Overton, who's got the news headlines and today's papers.
Two developments overnight in the Shannon Matthews case. Detectives investigating the alleged abduction of the 9-year-old have arrested a 32-year-old woman. West Yorkshire Police say it's on suspicion of perverting the course of justice. It's also emerged the man detained after Shannon was found in a flat has tried to kill himself in prison. Michael Donovan, who's awaiting trial charged with kidnap and imprisonment, is the uncle of the youngster's stepfather. The Olympic torch arrives in Paris today after an eventful passage through London. Scuffles broke out as the eyes of the world watched a chaotic relay in the capital. Thousands of human rights protesters disrupted yesterday's high-profile event, throwing the spotlight on China's human rights abuses. Scotland Yard says 37 arrests were made. We'll be hearing from The Guardian's reporter on the streets of London later in this programme. One of the world's leading climate scientists is warning the EU and its international partners must urgently rethink targets for cutting carbon dioxide. James Hansen, head of the NASA Goddard Institute for Space Studies, says they're grossly underestimating the scale of the problem. He argues a sharp reduction is needed if humanity wishes to preserve a planet similar to that on which civilization developed. More on this in just a moment. Zimbabwe's opposition's rejecting demands for a recount. President Robert Mugabe's ruling party, ZANU-PF, wants a further delay in the release of election results. That's enraging officials from the Movement for Democratic Change party, which continues to press ahead with legal attempts to get the figures published. It's as reports claim militant supporters of Mugabe have invaded 8 white-owned commercial farms, driving at least 4 cattle ranches off their land, with some suggesting it's a further indication Mugabe plans to use violence to stay in power. Hillary Clinton's chief election strategist has stood down. It's after it emerged Mark Penn had met with representatives of the Colombian government to help promote a free trade agreement. That's a policy which Clinton opposes. Cardiff City have secured their place in the FA Cup final. Joe Ledley scored the only goal of the game against fellow championship club Barnsley. The Welshman will be back at Wembley to battle it out with Premiership side Portsmouth on May the 17th. A quick look at this morning's papers now. The Sun names the latest woman arrested in the Shannon Matthews investigation and also goes into details of the suicide attempt. Three pictures from London's shambolic Olympic relay dominate the front of the Independent, with the Olympic motto printed alongside, faster, higher, stronger. Similar photos cover the front of the other papers too. A day of mayhem, states the Telegraph. Running the gauntlet is the headline in the Mail, as you struggle to spot the torch amid the two layers of colourful security surrounding it. More chaos, but of a different kind, on the front of the Express, as it pictures a smiling young girl wrapped up warm, warning us more snow is on the way. There's more on today's stories and breaking news at guardian.co.uk.
One of the world's leading climate scientists, James Hansen, says the carbon dioxide targets set by the European Union and other countries aiming to tackle climate change are hopelessly inadequate. Ed Pilkington's in New York for The Guardian. He told me what Hansen's latest research says.
Well, it's fairly shocking. What it says is that the target for CO2 levels in the atmosphere that a lot of the big groups that are concerned about global warming are aiming for at the moment, notably the European Union and a lot of big environmental groups, the target they're aiming for, which is 450 parts per million of CO2 in the air, if we stayed at that level for we don't quite know how long, that in itself would be catastrophic. It would lead to the melting of pretty much all the ice on the globe, and therefore enormous sea level rises of something like, you know, 250 feet, sort of almost unthinkable. Now, he's not saying that this would happen overnight once we hit 450 parts per million, which people expect us to do in 25 or 30 years' time. But what he's saying is that the ambition that the world has to keep CO2 levels to 450 parts per million is in itself completely inadequate to the scale of what the disaster facing the world.
How was his research carried out?
Well, I think that's what makes it quite convincing and will have to be taken seriously even by Hansen's critics, of which it must be said he has several. But what he's done is, in contrast to previous estimates of what the impact of CO2 levels would be on temperature rise, which were done theoretically, they were done through sort of physics models, about hypothetical models of what would happen if CO2 levels went up. What he's done, he's looked at the real history of the Earth using cores taken from the ocean bed, which go back millions of years. And what he found was, you know, rather paradoxically and almost amusingly, were this not so dangerous, that the ice age began, the world glaciated over at precisely 450 parts per million, which is, as I said, the target when the EU and all, you know, people who take global warming seriously, or most of them, are aiming for. So, and he warns that the same could happen in reverse. You know, if we stay at 450 parts per million, then that would be the same CO2 level which in which the ice sheets would melt. So it's kind of fairly startling stuff that he's saying, I think.
Ed Pilkington reporting, and there's more on climate change at guardian.co.uk/environment. And later in today's programme, the school uniform made out of recycled bottles. Also on the Guardian's website today, people who've emigrated to Britain in each decade from early in the last century until now discuss their experiences at guardian.co.uk/immigration. The modern art of mixtapes, Johnny D on the merits of muxtape.com. Tell us what you think at blogs.guardian.co.uk/arts. And how have recent events in the mortgage market affected your borrowing options? Post a question for our home buying expert at guardian.co.uk/money. And Claire Fowler complains that applying for an Arts Council grant is an object lesson in bureaucratic tick box political correctness. guardian.co.uk/comment is free. The Olympic torch is travelling 85,000 miles from ancient Olympia in Greece to Beijing, host of the 2008 Summer Olympics. It gives human rights activists all over the world a chance to highlight what they see as injustices in China. Demonstrations are expected in Paris, San Francisco and New Delhi. Yesterday, it was London's turn, as Paul Kelso reports for The Guardian.
I'm standing on the corner of Bedford Place and Bloomsbury Square, where around 200 to 300 pro-Tibetan, anti-Chinese demonstrators have gathered. They're being very heavily policed by about 50 Metropolitan Police officers. And the demonstration has been corralled away from the route of the torch itself, which by contrast is lined with pro-Chinese supporters and spectators waving large Chinese flags outside the British Museum. The police have quoted Section 14 of the Public Order Act and many demonstrators clearing people off the pavements. Anyone with a Tibetan flag or any kind of banner has been moved out of the way. It's hard to avoid the conclusion that there is an attempt to keep the demonstrators well away from the torch itself. Earlier at Wembley Stadium, when the torch began its journey through London, about eight demonstrators were arrested. One of them attempted to impede the torch. It was as it was passed by Steve Redgrave, the five-time Olympic champion, onto the bus that carried it on the first part of its journey. Several other demonstrators were detained, apparently for no more than shouting slogans, and several were asked to remove T-shirts that, on the face of it, were inoffensive and certainly didn't break any law. T-shirts are saying things such as "Stop the killing in Tibet" and "China, stop the killing." The police operation at this stage is certainly very decisive. I wouldn't go as far yet to say it's heavy-handed, but there is a marked contrast between the treatment of those protesting at China's actions in Tibet and those who are waving Chinese flags, waiting peacefully, it must be said, for the torch to pass.
Paul Kelso. I'm John Dennis, still to come on Guardian Daily. After Alistair Darling scraps the 10p tax rate, MPs demand to know how he's going to help people in low-income groups. Blazers with bottle, the school uniform was made entirely from recycled Coke bottles. And on the buses, as pensioners enjoy their new freedom to travel free on local services, we accompany one over 60 on an epic trundle across England.
Seem to have done a lot of miles around a lot of country lanes, but it's been nice. I mean, initially it was a bit damp and misty, but the sun came out during the day and it was quite nice.
But first, increasing numbers of young children are being prescribed antipsychotic drugs to control their behaviour, according to new research. Critics of the tranquilizers say they're a chemical cosh that could cause children long-term damage or even kill them. The Guardian's health editor is Sarah Bosley.
In the States, what's happened is that a new diagnosis has taken off. Some psychiatrists began to wonder about children with ADHD, which is attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, and to think that maybe the usual drugs, which were Ritalin and things like it, weren't working so effectively in those children, and they were still behaving in a troublesome way. So because of this difficult behaviour, they tried them with antipsychotics, and they have shown that they certainly calm them down. The critics say, well, actually, these are major tranquilizers. So what you've done really is knock them out to some extent. So nobody's going to be very troublesome when they're on one of those drugs. Diagnoses now of manic depression, which is the way it's being interpreted, which is mood swings disorder, you know, up one moment and down the next, have really soared in the United States in children. And that's a disorder that, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, was thought to have its onset at the earliest in late teenagers. In the United States, the prescribing of antipsychotics for children has soared by anybody's estimate. Really, a few years ago, there were very few on them indeed. Now it's something like 2.5 million children in the States. That's under the age of 18. But actually, some of them are really quite young. We've heard of examples of children starting on these drugs at the age of 2. Which is quite something. In the UK, this trend doesn't appear to be anything like as exaggerated. There is a rise, however. The figures that I've obtained that are about to be published in the US Journal of Paediatrics show that the prescribing of them has doubled between 1992 and 2005. And actually in one age group, the 7 to 11-year-olds, it's trebled.
Sarah Bosley. The Chancellor's decision to abolish the 10p starting rate of income tax is under renewed fire, this time from a Labour-dominated committee of MPs. The change, announced in Alistair Darling's first budget, will hit the people on the lowest incomes the hardest. Now the Commons Treasury Select Committee has asked the government to explain how it plans to achieve its aim of cutting child poverty. The Guardian's business correspondent Philip Inman told me why Mr Darling had scrapped the 10p tax rate.
There is an agenda within the Treasury for simplifying taxes, and this has been going on for some time. One of the problems with it is simplifying taxes tends to benefit the better off, and because a lot of the tax reliefs are have benefited over the years the people on lower incomes, and this was one of them. They brought in a 10p tax rate, so the first £1,800, £2,000 of your salary was only taxed at 10p rather than 22p. And he's now brought in a new system as of now, which means that we're all charged 20p on everything above our personal allowance, which is about £4,500. And so it's a simplification. It should make everything easier to calculate. But the higher up the income scale you are, the less the 10p tax rate means to you. And therefore, you're actually, after a certain point, better off. Now, they've calculated that if you're on £18,500 and get nothing else from the government, like tax credits for your children, then you're going to be worse off by losing the 10p tax rate.
And now the Treasury Select Committee has joined a mounting number of critics of this tax change announced by Alistair Darling.
It has. What it said is it doesn't understand why this group of people on low incomes without children seem to be bearing part of the brunt of raising taxes for a government that's basically run out of money. And they posed the question to the Treasury and the Chancellor to really explain why is it that these people were the ones who lose out, and why they haven't come up with something that can offset the worst effects of that tax rise on them.
And backbench Labour MPs are also very unhappy about this. Is Gordon Brown or Alistair Darling able to do anything to placate them?
Well, yeah, I mean, they've said they're going to look at it again, and obviously have said that with a serious enough face for the backbench MPs to withdraw their early day motion they put down in Parliament and say, OK, we'll let you look at it again and see what you come up with. What can they come up with? I mean, one of the problems sort of underlying all these developments is that the government has basically run out of money and is borrowing more and more and is reaching the limits of what it can borrow under its kind of the rules it set itself, and is looking around for ways to raise it. It wants to raise it from people who are better off, except that they tend to hide their money away and don't pay even when you try and tax them. And families are already squealing that they're suffering terribly with rising bills and council tax and all the rest of it. So they're looking desperately around for people they can raise the money from.
Philip Inman.
Guardian Daily. News and reports from around the world.
The modern school child learns about the effects of climate change and the benefits of recycling. My stepson recently went on a school trip, not to a museum, but to the local dump. Many schools themselves take steps to reduce their carbon footprint. Well, now a company in North Yorkshire is giving schools the chance to clad their pupils in a uniform made entirely from old Coca-Cola bottles, as The Guardian's Martin Wainwright reports.
What most people don't realise is the polymer that's used to make plastic bottles is exactly the same polymer that's used to make fabrics, polyethylene terephthalate. So old Coke bottles, if you like, can be reformed into useful fabrics.
And how do you go from the kind of rigidity of a Coke bottle, a plastic one, to what we've got here, which is, you know, the blazer you're showing me feels like just like any other form of cloth, soft, not kind of particularly shiny, all the rest of it?
Yeah, what happens is that the bottles that we all put in our bottle banks, most of those end up back in Asia and are resorted into clear plastic bottles. They are chipped and then broken down into the basic polymer ingredients and then repolymerized back into the polymer and then spun out into make a fibre.
And these are the first in the country, first school uniform entirely made of Coke bottles right down to the buttons?
Yeah, this is the first blazer ever to be made where all the ingredients, the fusibles inside the buttons, the zips, the pocket bags, the lining is all made from recycled polyester.
What's been the reaction from schools to this?
They're very, very interested because schools all have sustainability targets and the headmasters and mistresses are all very keen to meet these targets, and this would help them achieve those goals.
I gather you were at a conference, weren't you, the other day where this came up?
Yeah, we did a conference in Birmingham, the Specialist Schools and Academies Trust Show, and a lot of interest from head teachers at that conference.
The blazer, you know, when I was a teenager, it was kind of just about on its way out, and then the 60s seemed to kill it altogether, but that's not the case, I gather.
Yeah, what happened is in the late 60s, early 70s, a product that was developed actually for Americans to go jogging in, the sweatshirt, made its way into the uniform market. That's making its way out of the uniform market now, actually, as we go along, because it tends to fade and pill a lot and lose its shape, and it's a leisure wear look. A lot of schools have realised that a more formal look will help with their discipline. So in particular, inner-city schools that are trying to improve the discipline and education are putting the children back into blazers and ties.
Are they more pricey, these Coca-Cola blazers?
No, we're selling them about £1 more than a conventional blazer. So they'll start at about £25 and go up to about £27 for the larger sizes.
Charlotte Denning here, who works for School Colours, has just been kindly modelling the blazer. What's it like to wear? I mean, is it like any other blazer?
It's very lightweight indeed. It's kind of, and also it's very soft, so you don't, it's very comfortable to wear. So you don't really, it's not something that, I mean, especially as kind of a school, like you used to wear school uniform. I think kids would find it not uncomfortable, especially if they're wearing it all day and having to wear it, you know, from morning till afternoon.
And would you think, I mean, I've got two, well, they're grown up now, but two sons, when they were boys, they were very hot on all this kind of environmental stuff, you know, and recycling. Is that, do you think that'll have an appeal to school-aged children today?
I think it will. I think it's getting kind of more appealing to kind of the younger generation. Maybe it didn't used to be, but I think it is getting better and better. And I think younger people are realising that and what, how to recycle, and they're getting taught how to recycle as well, so...
I mean, they might even, could it be cool to wear a Coca-Cola blazer?
I suppose if you're calling it something like a Coca-Cola blazer, then it definitely, I think it would go to younger kids, definitely.
Martin Wainwright reporting. From this month, anyone aged over 60 can travel anywhere in Britain on local buses for free. Last week, thousands of pensioners filled their flasks and packed lunch boxes and took advantage of their new mobility. Well, to celebrate this, The Guardian's Stephen Morris accompanied one senior citizen on a four-day journey from Cornwall, the westernmost tip of England, to the Scottish border in the north. That pensioner, Steve's father, Peter Morris.
Have you got your pass?
Yes, I have.
Have you got your barley sugars?
No, I've got my humbugs.
OK, I think this is our bus. Let's go. The first leg of the journey began in bizarre fashion. We got on the bus to Truro with two charity fundraisers, one dressed as Father Christmas, the other as an elf. Nobody knew if they were very late for Christmas or really, really early. But soon they had the whole bus singing Christmas carols.
Fear not, said he, for mighty dread had seized their troubled minds.
But if you want to wait here for half an hour, wait for me. I am that bus, go direct to Exeter.
Oh, you are?
5 past one,
right.
Yeah.
We'll do that then.
Yeah,
we'll do that.
5 past one, all right?
Cheers.
That kind driver helped us onto the Western Greyhound at New Quay, the UK's surf capital, and we rolled along Cornwall's Atlantic Highway. Exeter for tea, then on through Somerset. By 10 o'clock we reached the cathedral city of Wells. We've done 170 miles, got about 300 to go. Highlights so far, Dad?
Oh, it's been an interesting day. It started off with the Father Christmas, and we rolled on through beautiful countryside. It's been a long day, but it's been quite eventful.
And I was struck by the fact that every single bus was on time.
Oh, yes, that was great. And the drivers were so helpful, it was untrue.
Do you still think we'll make it all the way?
No doubt about it. As long as the people are as efficient as they have been so far.
You don't fancy catching a train?
No, not at all. We're going to finish the job. That's timing.
It's close, isn't it?
It was. Where are we going? Upton?
Upton, yeah.
There are bound to be a few near misses on a journey from Cornwall to Cumbria on the best part of 30 local buses. That was us almost missing a crucial connection in Worcestershire. So we're on the 558. This is a bus we do know.
Yes, it's on our way home now. Just a few miles more and we're there.
So what have we learned today?
Well, it's been a good day. We seem to have done a lot of miles and a lot of country lanes. But it's been nice. I mean, initially it was a bit damp and misty, but the sun came out during the day and it was quite nice.
A lot of buses, so we haven't got very far today.
No, because they've gone around and around all the country lanes and all the country villages.
So how does it feel being back on your home patch now?
Well, it's very nice. But it's only for a short time, isn't it? Just one night, one quick night, and we're away again next morning.
Yeah, you're in bed tonight and then away again.
Yes, that'll be fine. It's great. Looking forward to the next, especially going up to the lake, so that'll be quite nice, I would imagine.
Our low point came on day three at a place called No Man's Heath, somewhere on the Shropshire-Cheshire border. According to the online bus timetable, which was excellent otherwise, there was a bus that took us through here mid-afternoon. It didn't. Fierce battles with commuters in Liverpool followed, and a very late arrival in Lancaster. We just about stayed on schedule. To cheer ourselves up, we gave Manju Ghosh, who is also crossing the country on local buses, but the opposite way to us, a call.
We started, my friend Christine and I, started from Berwick-on-Tweed on the 1st of April, I think that was Tuesday, and we've had a brilliant time going down from Berwick to, through Alnwick to Newcastle, where we are staying with, we stayed with friends.
As you're going all the way to Land's End?
We're going to Land's End, indeed.
Do you think many others will do as you've done and as my dad is doing?
Oh, definitely.
We're on the 555 bus now going from Lancaster to Keswick through the Lake District. We're looking forward to it. We've come across a group of walkers here. Jill is the team leader. Where are you off to today, Jill?
We're going on the bus to Burton in Kendal, and then we're doing a walk round and coming back into Milnthorpe. We'll have some refreshments at a cafe in Milnthorpe before returning by bus to Lancaster.
That sounds lovely, and your bus trip is all free now.
It is, yes.
Are numbers bigger today than they would be normally?
Well, they're bigger than they've been just recently, yes. Whether that's anything to do with the free transport, I don't know.
As we neared Journey's End on day 4, Dad sang us home. It's been a great trip. Most buses exactly on time. The drivers have been friendly, our fellow passengers good fun, and me and Dad are still talking. Time passes slowly on a bus, but that was good too. Life can go too quickly sometimes. Take it from us. If you want to slow down for a few days, just try crossing the country on local buses.
Stephen Morris. The producers of today's Guardian Daily were Phil Maynard and Andy Duckworth. My name's John Dennis. Thank you for listening.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.